Good morning. Today we have Judy Schwiebert and Jeannie Castine on with us. They are in Congress District. Is it District 2? I'm a little confused by the districts and how they're referred to.
It is Legislative District 2. And there is a lot of confusion among folks because, I don't know, congressional just flows off the tongue more easily than legislative, right? But congressional is the national level, and legislative is right here in Arizona. In the past, our legislative district has been 20. We did redistricting. Now we're in Legislative District 2. Some people just say LD2.
Right. Oh, well, that makes sense. I understand now. I should have understood that before. And, you know, I feel like I knew that before. It's just one of those facts that I guess slides out of my head easily enough. Judy, you were a legislator in District 2. How long have you been a legislator?
I was just elected in 2020, so I've been in for one term.
Now, that sounds like you'd be a novice, but after 2 years of that duty, how does it feel?
Well, it has certainly been a long slog. We've had two very long legislative sessions, much longer than they are supposed to be. We are supposed to be a part-time legislature, but it goes about 100 days. But we've gone to June 30th, the first year, which was, I don't know how many days. And this last session was 167 days and ended, I believe it was June 24th.
Was that because of COVID, or was that because of some of the issues that were had come up in front of the legislature?
Well, it's largely because we have had a majority that has not been able to agree on anything. Historically, the majority in the legislature, which has been a Republican majority for 50 years, and in most recent years, they have not been interested or willing to really share any power with the Democrats, who at this point represent half the people in Arizona. And they've had a very divided caucus that hasn't been willing to work together to get things done. So much so that this year, we finally had a bipartisan budget because they couldn't get all their Republicans onto the budget. They had to come to Democrats.
So are you seeing fractures in the Republican Party?
Oh, very much so.
It's surprising, but it's also not surprising, because as a former Republican, I can understand fracturing from the party, because I fractured so much that I'm no longer in the party. But it's still a little surprising to hear that. On the national level, they seem really good at having one narrative.
Well, I think that the Republican Party has been hijacked by extremists. And that was a big part of why it was so hard to get things done. I mean, we have so many Arizonans who are hurting at this point. We have a water shortage crisis, an affordable housing crisis, an affordable healthcare crisis. We have one third of our children across Arizona have no permanent qualified teacher in their classroom. But instead of addressing those issues, the extremist members of the Republican Party have kept us all occupied with trying to fight off attacks on our elections, on our freedom to vote, on so many things. They've been attacking our LGBTQ community, you know, all just a lot of attacks. And I know Jeannie can talk more about this as well. She's been a close observer of the legislature.
And I'll give her a moment to say, I just want to interject that Catherine is taking care of her elderly father, and she's probably on the phone right now with her cardiologist. He just got out of the hospital, so we have to excuse her while she's doing that. But she did want us to continue. She thought that this call might come in. So Jeannie, did you want to follow up on that and give us a little more insight into what's going on there? Because this is something that I stay up to date on politics, but generally not local politics. So I don't really know the skinny on what's going on in my own state.
And I think that's fairly common. Even with my closest friends who know that I've sat in an elected office before, that I've ran for other positions that I'm currently running now, they all still tend to gravitate towards national politics because their whole entire news channels devoted to following absolutely everything that happens in DC. But really, the most important things are happening in our legislatures. They hold the purse strings. They determine the budget. They decide what bills even get a hearing in a committee. And I can tell you that less than 1% of the bills put forth by the Democrats in the House and the Senate even get a hearing, less than 1%. So the ideas that they bring forward on behalf of their constituents won't even be heard. And oftentimes the only way that it can be heard is by asking a Republican to run the bill. So there's just one seat in the House and one seat in the Senate that give them a majority by one seat, but they, you know, they act a lot like they have a supermajority, which in years past they did. But over the past decade or so, we've slowly watched the makeup of our legislature change. I believe it was in the Senate where they had maybe six, eight, something like that, Democrats back in the 2000s. And they would joke and call themselves the pizza party because there were so few of them, they could share a pizza together. But over the last decade, through data-driven, looking at the data, looking at the numbers, looking at voter registration, precinct by precinct, we've managed to gain several seats so that we're just one seat shy in the Senate, just one seat shy in the House. And so the amount of bills that came through the legislative session this time around was just dizzying. It was staggering. And it's part of a larger plan by some very conservative groups and think tanks and like ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council that was set up by the Koch Foundation, where they, you know, share model legislation to all the state legislatures and assemblies. And it's part of a broader plan called Project Blitz, where literally you've got folks like me who part of my day job is tracking legislation that's going through the legislature. We're all just scrambling, you know, countless bills that were attacking the LGBTQ community. And so there was a, you know, LGBTQ coalition, and everybody just felt like we were trying to herd cats. It's just impossible to track everything. The voting attacks this time around, I mean, hundreds of bills based on the big lie and the whole stop the steal thing and keeping everybody again scrambling, attacks on reproductive rights, these culture war attacks on schools and teachers, countless bills about mask mandates and vaccinations. And so it has this effect of really, it's hard to put your energy where you think it can be best used, right? To most of the time block bills. And so that was the climate down at the Capitol.
That does sound very overwhelming. And it sounds mm-hmm. like, so it's to me, what I'm hearing is a national campaign by the Republicans that's being pushed down into the state by state. Just have mm-hmm. a blanket coverage. It's not even really necessarily the local Republicans' ideas. It's just they're just taking it wholesale from higher up, which strikes me as being, it bothers me because my idea is that local government is important because it's what's happening here. We know what's happening. We know the best ways to solve our own problems. And if we don't want people coming from outside and telling us what to do, mm-hmm. I thought that was the whole point of being a conservative in the first place.
That's exactly right.
A lot of those values that, you know, have been held up by the GOP for decades, you know, my dad is a lifelong Republican, but really doesn't vote that way anymore. But those things like fiscal conservancy, it's not really a value of the Republican Party anymore. And you can look and see how many tax breaks to the wealthy and misuse and reallocation to things like private prisons, where people are profiting off of the suffering of others. You know, local control, that's something that the Republican Party has said that is important to them. But now we're seeing preemptive bills that tie the hands of local governments, municipalities, school boards, government agencies, et cetera. And then small government. What we're seeing right now, instead of small government, is Big Brother is watching every step you make. And you could be fined, fired, decertified if you're a teacher. You know, there are other industries where they're trying to take away different rights of those industries because they want them to kowtow to the kind of Republican Party platform, which is currently culture wars. And that's, again, the national scene. That's why we saw those same similar type of bills, right? In Florida and Texas and Tennessee and Missouri, because they were all modeled after a national model.
I have a simple request. Can we just put as much money into our schools as we do to our prisons?
Exactly. Well, exactly. We put more money into our prisons than we do into all three universities combined.
And not by, and that's a good point. Not by a little bit, by a landslide.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Maybe that's part of the problem. And I guess that's part of the larger messaging problem, is that it's a little bit more nuanced and complicated to explain why it's better to put more money into education than prisons, because you can stop the problems to begin with, but that takes more explanation.
Well, I think that's a really good point. And it's very unfortunate that it seems like at this point in the last 2 years, certainly when I've been in the legislature, so much of our time and energy is spent on just trying to stop these attacks. And the attacks, as you say, are coming from model legislation from ALEC and other right-wing conservative groups. And they're not about helping Arizonans, especially everyday working Arizonans. They're about benefiting the wealthiest among us, and they're about keeping us divided so that we can't gain power. I think there are a lot of scare tactics being used by the Republicans to make us afraid of our teachers and our LGBTQ youth and of people who would steal our elections. And all of these are manufactured things that distract us from the real issues at hand. We should be spending more time focused on investing in our schools, on investing in solutions to our water shortage crisis, into making sure that we are all safe, truly safe in our community, because we have an educated population and people who find a way to contribute to our economy and our community.
It really seems like the Republicans are leading through fear. And the opposite side of that seems really strange to me, because it's almost like they're afraid of the future, because it's always about make America great again, as opposed to acknowledging that we are at a better place than we've ever been across the board on almost every issue. Well, that was up until June 24th. Now we really do need to get back to a better place. And I think we can now point back to saying, you know, we do need to roll back American greatness to June 23rd, when women had the right to control their own bodies. And just as an aside, I'm a man, it's not my issue, but I was just watching a rerun of 30 Rock from 2012, so 10 years ago, and Tina Fey made a joke, the punchline of which was Roe v. Wade, and I cringed because it's the kind of joke you can't make anymore. So even though it's not my issue, I still feel it. Mm-hmm. It just feels really strange to be living now. And I was born in 1971, so for my whole life, essentially, has been the era of Roe v. Wade, and it just feels weird to be rolling back rights in the United States. That just seems very wrong to me. It's the wrong direction.
It is the wrong direction. And as a woman who was born considerably earlier than 1971, I have watched the trajectory of the women's rights movement and all the things that we have gained. When I was first married, I couldn't get a credit card in my own name. And that just shocks me. And we have come so far in self-determination just through birth control and the birth control pill and the options that we have. We can now determine our own destinies rather than just how it was before. So to see that fundamental right of determining your own destiny because you can make a choice about your own body is just stunning. And I don't believe that this can stand. I believe it will not stand, this attack, but we all have to stand up and make our voices heard and elect people who will stand for equality for women, right down to self-determination for our own bodies, if we are going to change this. It is an all hands on deck moment. We really need people to vote for candidates who will protect their bodily freedom.
Well, to vote, I think that's what's most disturbing. But I probably spend too much time on Twitter and on TikTok, but it seems to me over the past couple of years, the further left of the Democratic Party has just thrown up their hands in some ways. Maybe it's not the further left. Maybe it's the age difference. Maybe it's the younger Democrats who just throw up their hands and say, well, these Democrats aren't doing anything for me, so why should I bother to vote? Every vote is important. Every vote is more important than we can possibly imagine. And the problem is that we're in the current fix that we're in because people haven't voted in the past. Get out and vote. I guess I'm getting a little angry, but it annoys me that people complain, oh, my vote doesn't matter. Your vote matters. And it mattered more 10 years ago than it does now. It matters all the time. But the fact that you didn't vote 10 years ago is why we're in our current predicament.
But rather than looking back, like our opponents often do, let's go back to the good old days, which we know were not always such good old days for everybody. Let's focus on today and moving forward. And there's always a do-over. There's always the chance to do better. And let's do better. Let's everybody vote. Your vote does matter.
Thank you, Judy. That's why I turn to people like you, because rather than getting angry about the past, you're looking to the future, and that's more important. So I appreciate your leadership.
Thank you.
On that note, again, not being paying that much attention to local politics, I feel like I don't really understand the budget. Is there anything that you can tell me, a novice in my own state, about what's going on budgetarily speaking?
Maybe one of the most important things to start with is that this year, Arizona had a $5.3 billion revenue surplus, more revenue than we expected, especially given the pandemic. But I think it was a lot of that federal money that poured into our state in the form of propping up our unemployment system when so many people were losing their jobs that helped make sure that we did continue to have the revenue coming in. So we have this huge surplus, and we have had so many long-term needs that have not been addressed. You know, at the top of the list for me, of course, is our public schools, but other things as well, healthcare systems. We're grossly underfunding providers who help provide care for people with long-term illnesses or who have developmental disabilities and other things. So this was a real opportunity to pass a budget that could spend some money without raising a penny in taxes on anybody to get things to help everyday Arizonans. Ultimately, in the budget negotiations this year, as I think I mentioned earlier, the Republicans couldn't agree because there is a faction of about 10 or 12 extremists in the Arizona State House that don't want to spend a dime on anything. And other Republicans felt like there were some wise investments, and they shared that concern with the Democrats, who have been shouting that from the mountaintops. We need to be investing in the everyday people of Arizona if we're all going to thrive.
That's what they're there for, after all.
Exactly. So ultimately, we wound up with a bipartisan budget because those extremists would not get on board with anything that the rest of their party wanted. So we did get a $1 billion increase in public education funding this year. We did get $5 million in arts funding, for example, this year, the first time in years and years we really invested anything in state money in the arts, and a number of other things as well. I can go through a whole list. But before I get too far, I want to also mention that while it was not part of the budget per se that we voted on, because we voted on a bipartisan budget that did make wise investments using that $5.3 billion surplus. At the same time, the Republicans ran a bill separately that expanded private school vouchers to everybody and anybody. And that allows people who, for example, currently send their children to private schools and have the wealth to do so, now they don't have to pay anything to go to the private schools. Everyday taxpayers like you and me will be subsidizing the wealthy to be able to send their children to a private school. And these private schools, in contrast to our public schools, who follow a publicly known curriculum, who are required to test students to document that they are making progress, that students are learning, we're being held accountable. Private schools don't have to tell us anything about what they're teaching, and they don't have to provide any kind of testing that documents that students are indeed succeeding. It's kind of like taking about $1 billion that will probably be funneling out from our state coffers directly into the pockets of the wealthiest Arizonans and ultimately the owners of private schools who have a history in Arizona of becoming millionaires at the cost of taxpayers because they're running these private school schemes.
The school voucher seems like a really simple issue on the surface until you have to dig down a little bit to realize how corrupt it is.
Well, yeah.
Part of that is the experience I've had with our son, who is now in high school, but he went to several charter schools when he was younger, and some of them were okay and some of them were less okay. And even the good ones struggled a lot. So it seems like the ones, there were two types of successful charter schools that I've seen. Ones that were started a long time ago, like that are 20 years or older, because he's actually at one now that's quite old, Phoenix College Preparatory Academy, which was started about 20 or 30 years ago. But then the other successful ones are the scam ones, the ones that actually don't do anything and they just rake in the money because you can't fund a good school with the limited funds they're getting for that. And the other problem I see with the school voucher system was the private schools don't have to take all students. They only can take the best students or the students that perform well or that don't need special education. And that seems to me just absolutely insane.
Well, exactly.
And it's not a level playing field.
It is not a level playing field. And while Republicans tout school choice, every child should have the opportunity to go to a private school. We want school choice. We don't want people to have to go to a certain school. Well, the fact is Arizona already has an abundance of school choice. Students and their families can choose any public district or charter school. Now, of course, the Republicans want to expand that to private schools where you have to pay tuition. However, those private schools can, as you say, they can cherry pick their students. It's not about student choice. It's really about private school choice because the private schools get to say, we'll take these people and these people and these people, but you all are not quite a fit, which is just not the American way, you know.
It's not democratic.
It's not democratic.
You know, it's fine if they want to do that on their own dime. That's okay. But don't ask me to pay for it.
Exactly. And that was my point on the floor. Multiple times I talked about that. I know that Jeannie has some important points about this as well.
Well, I think the bigger problem with this that we should all be talking about, especially right now, given the recent decisions from the Supreme Court, is that these are schools, oftentimes religious schools, that are now getting state funding, taking away my taxpayer dollars, your taxpayer dollars, giving them to a school like one that's right down the road from my house called Tipping Point Academy, where it says Christian, conservative, constitutional. And then it says no fear, no masks, no closures. And you dig a little bit deeper into the organization and it has ties with a national organization that has ties to white supremacist organizations. And so that is basically, in my opinion, state-sanctioned indoctrination because this school is allowed to discriminate against people based on their sexual orientation or their gender identity. And the student's code of conduct or, you know, their pledge says that they believe that marriage is between a man and a woman, that life begins at conception. And now each and every student, and I don't know how many students that school can handle, but each and every one of them can qualify for taxpayer dollars. When on the floor of the House last week, Minority Leader Reginald Boulding asked, will parents who are already enrolling their children in these schools, will they still have access to that money? And the sponsor of the bill said yes. He said even multimillionaires and billionaires, and the sponsor of the bill said yes. This is a violation of our Arizona Constitution, first of all, because in the Constitution, it says that we should adequately fund our public schools and that our university should be as nearly free as possible. And now neither of those things are true. And Arizona sits dead last or in the bottom three for metrics like class sizes, teacher turnover, per pupil spending, satisfaction, you name it. And Arizona is typically in the bottom three. So we are at the point now where if we don't flip this legislature, and I know people get tired when you say this is the most important election of our lifetime, because we've been saying that for our entire lifetime, but this really is, because, you know, with this Tipping Point Academy, we are reaching a tipping point. Because the thing that Judy so eloquently brought up too was, remember, you know, when you offer these vouchers to people, this is really a subsidy. It's a down payment, because the tuition itself is easily twice as much. And she said on the floor, remember that there are children who rely on public transportation to get back and forth to school. They rely on their neighborhood schools. They need for their neighborhood schools to be fully funded. You know, for a parent to take a chunk of money that won't cover a full tuition to have to drive them, if you don't have a vehicle, it's very difficult to get a kindergartner to take the city bus. If the private school doesn't provide transportation, this is not really open up to our most vulnerable citizens in the state. This is open to the people who are already taking advantage of these systems. And again, it's lining the pockets of others who are profiting off of our public schools.
The middle class has struggles with that. It's not even just the poorest of the poor that this is restricting, but it's general normal people that don't have two cars or mm-hmm. don't have one car. I can't really say it properly.
Or work multiple jobs and are not available to drive their kid to school, or don't have the extra funds to buy the uniform or to buy the extra costs that become associated with being in a private school. Whereas our public schools, they accept every student wherever they are, and we lift up every child. And when we don't, it's often because we do not have the funding to do it. Right. So I always want to be careful when I talk about the dire straits we're in with our public schools, because I think our teachers and our administrators and our district center school boards are doing really a heroic job with the revenue that they are given in educating our children. It is we in the legislature who are really tying their hands by not providing the resources that they need, especially in schools in lower socioeconomic areas. We just, as part of this budget, we did include something called an opportunity weight, which will give some additional funding to those schools who are educating children who live in poverty. And it costs more money to educate children who live in poverty. They need that. In the past, Arizona has been one of only seven states across the nation that has not included this opportunity weight, we call it. So I'm really pleased that we've included that this year in the budget. The problem is that we just put $1 billion in additional revenue into our education, public education bucket. And then we drilled holes in the bottom of it with this voucher expansion. And we're going to drain that same $1 billion right back out. You know, when one student gets a voucher to go to a private school, the advocates of vouchers say, yay, we're really helping that kid. Well, number one, I don't buy that, because I think they can get a great education in our public schools. That's just not my opinion. That's fact. We see all kinds of evidence of that. But it's really hurting the other nine kids who are still in that school, because 9 out of 10 families choose our public schools. So one kid's going to a private school, and that takes funding out of that classroom for the rest of the kids who are in that school. So the solution is not to send kids away, although they can certainly make another choice. The solution is to make sure that every child is getting a great education by investing in the schools where they are.
We need to raise the baseline.
Yes.
Until we have good education available to everyone, we shouldn't be spending on it. We have to get the basics right. I mean, it's just getting back to basics. I'm embarrassed that as an Arizona and how bad the education system is here. And how that will affect our future.
It does. Whether people have children or not, we talk about this all the time when we're at doors and in conversation with people, because whether we have children or not, the fact that we're not adequately investing in our public schools is going to hurt all of us. Mm-hmm. It's going to mean that employers don't have the strong educated workforce they need. And as all of us age, it's going to mean that we don't have new people coming up behind us to take the jobs that we need to make sure that our economy is continuing and thriving and that we're taken care of in our old age.
I think we only have time for a couple more questions. So another important question I have is, what are important issues on the upcoming ballot for this year?
The first one that occurs to me, there are a number of them, but the first one that occurs to me is that the legislature passed a bill that this year, over the objections of the Democrats, that would require a supermajority in order to pass an initiative. So in recent years, there have been a number of initiatives on the ballot, including Prop 305, where the public resoundingly rejected an expansion of vouchers, and including Prop 208, in which the public demanded additional investments in our public schools, which was later overturned by a Ducey packed court here in Arizona. But this supermajority bill would require any initiative to pass by 60% in order to pass. And it was amended to say, well, it only has to pass by 60% if it affects the budget.
Wow.
So it's clearly aimed at people who want more investment in schools or in anything else for that matter.
Right. Well, what bill are you going to pass that doesn't have some effect on the budget?
Right. So if we are trying to pass a bill in the legislature, we just need 50% plus one. But now if the public wants to pass a bill, they need to have 60%. So that is really a double standard for the people of our state.
It's also not democratic. Democracy right. is the majority rules. The majority is 51%. I know that may not sound fair because it's only 1% swing, but that's how it works.
Right. And they're trying to change the rules. And they're trying to change the rules because the people of Arizona have in recent years resoundingly passed these initiatives because our legislature has been unwilling to act. And they're trying to protect their own power. So I believe that there will be an initiative in 2024 to roll back this universal voucher expansion. So what's really important is that we protect that initiative process for this initiative and any others going forward by defeating this measure that's going to be on our ballot this November. And I don't have a number for what it's going to be on the ballot. Usually there's a prop number or referral number, but we will try to keep people posted. Make sure to vote no on limiting your own power as a citizen by requiring you to have a 60% majority in order to get your ideas passed.
That makes me kind of mad because, as you said, it's a double standard. The reason it's a double standard is because suddenly our votes as a resident of Arizona means less than the vote of the legislator. The legislature still just needs 51%, but if we the people want something, we need to bump it up to 60%. Why? Mm-hmm. It's reminiscent of Animal Farm, where all animals are equal, but some animals are more equal than others.
Exactly.
Oof. This is why we talk about art. It gets me upset, but not quite this upset. And a final question, if I may, Judy, which is better, ice cream or cake?
Ice cream.
That was an easy answer for you. Do you want to expound on that? Well, you don't have to because, you?
No. Well, when I was growing up, our family would be watching TV in the family room. And around 9 o'clock, my dad would stand up and stretch his arms and say, okay, who wants ice cream? And we'd say, well, what do we have? And he'd call out from the kitchen, we have Rocky Road, chocolate chip, orange sherbet, mint chocolate chip, marble fudge, butter pecan.
Did you live in an ice cream store?
Well, I know. I now, looking back now, it's kind of like, maybe I did. And so there was always an abundance of ice cream in our house. So later on, when I grew up and people would come over to my house and I'd say, oh, you want some ice cream? And I'd open it up and I'd say, oh, I've got chocolate chip, marble fudge, or butter pecan. And they go, oh my gosh, you've got so much ice cream. And I was like, really? There's only three kinds of ice cream here.
I can understand why you would go that route then, because if I had the choice between having an option of 12 different ice creams or one kind of cake, I think my odds are better of going with the ice cream.
Yeah.
Well, it's quite a story
cake,
though.
Yeah. Chocolate cake is great. I love chocolate cake, but nothing tops ice cream.
I read that your father was a shop teacher and I thought that would be my favorite thing about him, but I don't know now. Anyway, Judy and Jeannie, thank you for coming on and sharing your time. And I just want to note that Catherine wasn't here through most of the show because she had to take an important call, a health call for her father.
Right. Oh, wait, let's back up. What was Jean's favorite?
Oh, Jeannie. I'm sorry, Jeannie.
I'm really so much more of a savory snack person. You're like, if you leave me alone with a bag of chips, I'm going to go for the bag of chips every time. But if I have to choose, I'm just going to be difficult because I'm going to say ice cream cake.
I knew someone was going to say that. No, typical. No, that was an excellent response. I think both of you nailed it out of the park. I would have just said cake like a dummy and not, you know, had any reason why. This is why no one votes for me. No one ever votes for me. Thankfully.
Have you ever run for office?
Well, no, but I don't see that has anything to do with it.
That's why they never vote for you.
I don't know. It's a kind of, I feel the same way about like playing the lottery. If you actually buy a ticket, it only marginally increases your chances of winning. So if I ran, it would only marginally increase my chances of winning, if that makes any sense. It doesn't, but that's my
logic. It doesn't make sense, James. Anyway,
with that logic, I think we'll say goodbye and thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, guys. I'm sorry I missed half of it. It's just been a week. I'm sorry.
Understood. Oh, of course. Okay. I understand.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.